Welcome to Hidden Battles, Destigmatizing Mental Illness, a weekly podcast where passionate advocates of mental health converge to illuminate unseen struggles faced by millions. Join Jeremy, Terrell, and Lorraine as they delve into candid conversations about stigmas, cultural risk, values, intersectionality, and mental health. Hear from mental health professionals and those diagnosed with a mental illness. Together, they put on the table the things people think about but are afraid to talk about. Get ready to embark on an insightful journey.
Listen weekly on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and subscribe, like, and please share with family and friends that can benefit. See you on the journey.
Welcome to another episode, the second episode of Hidden Battles, Destigmatizing Mental Illness. This episode's, I apologize for the beginning of it because it might sound a little bit boring to some people, but what I wanted to try to do is really display how businesses try to organize themselves. And for this first episode, for the first part of this episode, I'd like to talk about mission and vision values with Terrell and Lorraine. And I'm hoping that the viewers are able to take this back to their families. Family members should be thinking about what their mission and vision values are, because that's a foundation for what every family member does.
Right.
You know, we can go into specifics like schedule, how you schedule your week, what type of food you eat, we'll get into all that. But for right now, really, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for either watching or rewatching what we're doing. So I guess we just get right into it. You know, I think, you know, we haven't had very many discussions about what a mission is, or what values are, or what our vision is, like, together. So we wanted to keep that kind of, like, raw, you know, and so I think that's what we're here for.
So when I think of mission, with my military background, you know, the mission overall, for the military, is to protect the U.S., protect our country, our nation. Then it drills down to, when you're in basic training, the mission of the drill sergeant is to get the trainees acclimated to the overall mission of the military.
Got it. Okay. What about you, Lorraine? When you hear the word mission, what do you think?
The mission. To me, is the overall marching orders to a specific goal. And with Hidden Battles, it's all in the name. The Hidden Battles is to talk about those and to share stories, events, experiences. But the mission is the marching orders.
Okay, so I mean, let's just kind of get started. Like, so, do you guys have any thoughts on what a mission statement could be? Like, mission statements should be pretty short. You know, you don't want a mission statement that's three paragraphs long.
Right.
You want to kind of cut to the chase. And so, like, for one of the companies that I own, Integrated Behavioral Health Services, the mission statement is Together Building a Stronger, Healthier Community. It, like, tells the audience, it tells consumers, it tells people that's what we want. Our ultimate goal is to build a healthier, stronger community. And so, do you have any initial, like, brainstorming thoughts or ideas on what a mission could be, or how you might want to get started? Are there any words that pop out?
Well, I think about law enforcement. You talked about how short it should be, to serve and protect.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
That's, like, kind of direct and to the point.
Okay.
With me, I think raising awareness.
Okay.
Mental illness, raising the awareness, and also advocacy.
So advocacy would be a good value. So okay. I'm going to put that under advocacy, under a value.
Okay.
Okay. because awareness is like, or I mean, advocacy rather, is interpretive, based on what your mission is. So what are we advocating for based on our mission? So the mission, I think we all could agree that, like, we're going to be saying some things that, you know, we're somewhat of an opinion-based podcast,
right.
And we're going to be sharing a lot of subjective information with folks. But I do think that in the end, we should be trying to provide some level of truth. And then we always need to be aware that, that the truth can change based on data. Okay. So right now, cottage cheese might be bad for your health, but then some doctor 2 years down the road is going to say, well, it's the bee's knees. You know, cottage cheese is, you know, you can have that for breakfast.
Exactly.
You know, so we got to be aware based on the current data that we have that, that, you know, we should always be striving for some level of truth. So right now we've got awareness, we've got truth, which could be values. I mean, I'm not saying they're not values, but when we're putting this together, we have some key words. That, so then when our listeners are hearing, they're saying, okay, well, how can I take my personal value system or my personal mission, how can I align it with Hidden Battles? Or how can Hidden Battles align and be a force in which my value system can be launched forward? So if I decide that I want to start signing petitions or pass out petitions or write legislation or whatever, do my values align, my family's values and mission and vision align with Hidden Battles? Does it align with it? And can we use this as part of a larger project in combining a value system to launch forward? Because you know, like, we will always have disagreements, like, right, politically, socially, religiously, whatever, but what values can we, like, I can pretty much surmise that we value our children.
Exactly.
And so when the decisions that we're making about how do we provide healthy food for our children, it's going to be pretty unanimous.
Exactly.
You know, it may not be unanimous on who we want in office, but when it comes to our kids, we can get down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we got awareness, we got trust. I do like advocacy as a value. That's just me drumming it up. We're just brainstorming. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
So I'm thinking of information, education, a lot of stories that I've heard about people are in search of information, education, knowledge, resources, so that they can make the proper decisions for family members that are suffering with some sort of mental illness.
Exactly. I think you get a key word there with resources.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a lot of the parents that we've talked to, it's just been a lack of, again, education, knowledge, and resources on mental illness locally that they can access.
And how is, you know, we hear there are a lot of great mission statements out there, and they sound really wonderful. But oftentimes, I'm really not impressed because it sounds good, but doesn't mean any damn thing. Because how are you enacting that? What are you actually doing to forge ahead with the mission? I use the military, for example.
Yeah.
So there's a mission. So you know what the mission is. And so now you have to go out and activate that mission. A lot of people have a mission statement and it sounds nice, then there isn't a damn thing happening behind it.
Sure. Well, you know, like when you're talking about mission statements, you do want to bring some level of authenticity to it, especially now.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you guys heard me say, shut the fuck up.
Right.
Like, just shut the fuck up. Quit talking, you know, whether it's kids on the internet, sending out pictures, whatever it is. Somebody's always got to be talking, right? And what I mean by shut the fuck up is mean listen. And so, you know, when we're talking about a mission statement, obviously we want to be respectful to the audience and the variances of who's listening. And we don't want to always be cussing. But maybe sometimes people just need to learn to shut the fuck up. Like, shut up and listen. Like, you think you know something. You think you're a troll. You think you're going to just throw something out there. You think that you just got an opinion online. Sometimes you just need to shut the fuck up.
And listen.
And 3/4 of these politicians should shut the fuck up, because if they shut the fuck up, then maybe they wouldn't have to be dealing with some of the dumb shit later on when they're trying to run for office or trying to be leaders. If they would just shut the fuck up and really listened and created policy based on their constituency, then maybe they would have something. But that's not the way that it goes. It's not the constituency leading the politician. It's the politician trying to convince the constituency to believe what they're saying.
So how do we rosy up, shut the fuck up in our mission statement? How do we put flowers on that?
Well, so I'm kind of throwing something out there. I'm trying to put this together a little bit. It's obviously something that we can negotiate on.
Right.
But I think growing toward understanding truth, resources, and awareness, and shut the fuck up. No, I'm kidding.
We're going to make it happen.
Yeah, for it.
Exactly.
And shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Semicolon, shut the fuck up. You know, so you know, I think on some level we just have to, maybe listening or something in there, but I do think that it's okay to sometimes tell people to shut the fuck up and listen. You know,
just the acronym.
You know, and I'm not SDFU. Yeah. We can put in there like growing toward understanding truth and growing toward understanding truth, resources, and awareness, and sometimes STFU.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just trying to. You said a lot. I said a lot, and so trying to really like
mesh it all together,
like, because I think I'm trying to hit the key points.
Right. And then at some point, those that are listening to the podcast may, through the means of communicating with us, may decide to send something in via email, social media, you know, and hopefully they won't tell us to shut the fuck up.
Sometimes we need to. Because you know me, sometimes I just start talking and I get going, and then sometimes I just be like, shut up.
But that's the great thing about this podcast. It is open speech and free speech.
Yes.
And, you know, you
Absolutely.
Have your opinion. And if
Absolutely.
You feel like saying that, it's okay.
Absolutely. Right. Because sometimes, you know, like with the companies that I have, you know, that we work together, and you'll see that, like, sometimes we can't grow if everybody's just flowers and cupcakes.
Exactly.
It's like, we need to know.
Exactly.
You know, are we making sense? Are we saying things that make sense? Because we're talking from a certain lexicon
right.
that a lot of people aren't used to, like intersectionality. And it's like, well, does the lay person who's working some, you know, blue collar, you know, whatever it might be, are they listening to that word saying, okay, you lost me there.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else is Charlie Brown, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
You know, so sometimes we have to learn to shut the fuck up and listen and maybe come back.
Exactly.
Be like, okay,
exactly.
Well, this is, let's dig more. Let's keep digging.
Right.
And I feel like that's what these few episodes are about, is like really digging into it and really trying to understand. So give it a shot. Does anybody want to reword what I said? Growing toward understanding truth, resources. I mean, it sounds a little bit wordy, but to me, I like the beginning of growing toward understanding.
Yeah.
Because it shows a growth.
Exactly.
That, you know, people are going to try to fact check us like we're C-SPAN or CNN or LMNOP. And in reality, we're learning too. We're
exactly.
trying to keep up with the data, and we're trying to find out data that's been hidden
right.
from us and the listeners, and
exactly.
we're trying to present that. So it's just, it's really about trying to educate people as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. and that's important. The educational part, and just giving people that space to share their stories and. But the growing too, and I kind of like that. And at first, I was like, "What do you mean growing? We're already established." But growing is a process, and it's a continual learning, and that's what we're doing here. Although there may be facts and data, as Jeremy said, there's a lot of opinions.
Sure.
But there's a lot of truth that you're going to hear also.
Speaking of opinions, I think that the beautiful thing about what we're doing is giving our audience an opportunity to express their opinions, and in doing so, we actually learn from what they have to say. There's a lot of people don't want to hear what another person has to say because
yeah.
they know every damn thing.
Yeah.
So we're giving our audience an opportunity to express their opinions, their thoughts about certain areas that we're
yeah.
having conversations about,
right.
to incorporate their opinions
right.
into what we're trying to uncover with Behind Hidden Battles.
Sure, sure. And you know, some of the news that I think that we're going to be reporting in the future is going to be somewhat daunting to people who have had miracles.
Right.
You know, like Ozempic. Like, we can get into that all day long, and we're not getting into the show, but
mm-hmm.
when people really find out what's behind Ozempic, and what we want to be able to do is produce a value exchange and say, look, this is the information that we know that we can produce at this moment. It doesn't mean it is the ultimate fact.
Right.
But what it does is it presents an antagonist thought to your relationship with that drug, so that you could make an informed decision about it. And I think that that's what is, we're leaving out, and that's what America's left out of the conversation. If you want some Reese's Pieces and it causes cancer, well, we're telling you it's causing cancer, right?
Yeah.
I'm not making this up. I'm not saying that that's what's happening. I'm just making it up.
Right.
I don't care. Beliefs, grass, concrete. You want to eat it, it causes cancer. Okay, well, now you know it causes cancer. If you want to continue eating it, well, you're educated.
Right.
So I want to, you know, draw back my. I'm not attacking Reese's Pieces because
yeah, don't
thing.
Do that.
I'm
like Reese's
Pieces. But I'm just saying, like, you know, just for an example purpose. I don't want to try to call out any brands, but I'm just trying to say, like, the ultimate point is like if we could produce the most factual thing at the time that we know it at this particular time and day,
right,
to people who were taking something like Ozempic. And knowing that's being now prescribed to six-year-olds, and that there's a bill in front of Congress right now that's promoting Ozempic to everybody and reducing its cost, yet the countries that have made it are not, that's not their first line of defense. Number one, because they don't have that same problem.
Yeah.
And so it's a drug being sold to America by European countries, and they don't have to suffer the consequences of side effects. Because we don't know what they are.
You know, some people don't care, though.
Yeah,
they're trying to get from point A to point B.
And you're right. But wouldn't you agree? So, and maybe this is a value conflict and a value exchange.
Right.
Some people are like, don't tell me that. Don't show me.
Exactly.
Don't tell me what this is because I feel like I got this right here and I don't want to hear it. But if you do want to hear it, this podcast is where you're going to hear it.
It's just like the smoker versus the vapor.
Look,
I stopped smoking. Now I'm vaping. And now you're telling me there's something wrong with the chemicals that I'm vaping.
Yeah.
Look, what do you want me to do? Cut my head off?
Right. But I can tell you personally right now, I have a nicotine pouch in my mouth right now. And so, but then you read articles about this. I've never said, I ain't the one to be perfect. We're not trying to sit here and say that we have perfect health. We're a part of it. I think we're trying to represent the layperson. We're trying to say, like, we're trying to normalize and share our experiences so that other people hear.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Right.
You know, I can,
exactly.
I can, you know.
This is really good information. Wow. But we're up on our break, our first break. Want everyone to stay tuned. Any words before we go to the break, Jeremy?
No, I do want to reiterate that mission, vision, and values for the family are left out. Family members do not sit and create mission and vision values together as a team, and we don't create roles within that team, and so we have to, and I know it sounds a little dry, but sometimes we have to treat our family members like a business. And I mean a true, authentic, loving, caring business.
That makes sense.
And for those that are listening and watching, go to the website, which is www.hiddenbattlesdmi.com. And make sure that you click that like button and share this podcast with your family members. We'll see you in a moment.
Hidden Battles Destigmatizing Mental Illness documentary has taken the route of major film festivals in 2025. Here is the documentary trailer.
Somewhere in your neighborhood, families are suffering from severe mental illness.
They put me in here because I tried to kill myself, which is extremely fucked up because I tried to kill myself.
And I ended up running my car into the Capitol.
Loved ones looking for answers.
I didn't know what to do. I really did not know what to do because I felt very alone at times. I felt like there really was no one that understood what I was going through.
And I remember the doctor telling me on the phone that lower your expectations. And that it wasn't going to be like you thought it was going to be.
I'm sorry, baby girl. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me.
Is the perception of mental illness fact or plain old stigma?
They didn't want their kids to be friends with me because they were afraid their kids would catch what I had.
Can someone that self-harms function on their own?
You need to take a look at the darkness and bring it into the light and understand that your behavior, your discrimination, your hate, your side comments, your jokes actually kill people.
Hidden Battles, destigmatizing mental illness.
Our mission, and so I think we've got something narrowed down. You know, missions are temporary. You know, they last about a year, and then you can kind of revisit to make sure that that's exactly what's happening. Again, I want to reiterate that every family should have a mission, vision, and values, so their children know that whether they're in a family or in a relationship or in business, that they should have a mission statement, a vision, and values. And I think that part of this, you know, what we're attempting to show is an authentic discussion about how do we come up with a mission, vision, and values. And one of the things that the listeners need to understand is that mission statements don't need to be, you know, biblical in nature and loss of negative words or whatever. Sometimes, you know, it can be shut the fuck up, you know, and that's
so
what
that's not ours, though, is it?
Okay. No, sir. Okay. So, Terrell, take over. Like, what did we come up with? How did we get there, you know, over the break?
So, yeah, we kind of went through a list of ideas in terms of how to make it sweet and to the point. And so we came up with deconstructing identity and taking cultural risk. So you guys want to break that down? I mean, you know, that's short. There's a lot being said there.
What do you surmise from that journey?
You know, so deconstructing identity, sometimes we feel so confident in our belief systems that we blindly go into events, work, politics, religion. And so I'd like the audience to remember what intersectionality is. It's racial identity, spirituality, gender, ability or disability, nationality, ethnicity. There's more to it than that, and we're going to get into that further the next episode. But when you're really thinking about your thoughts, feelings, ideas, behaviors around a particular topic, you know, all of the scholars or philosophers of our time have always said, when you think you know, you really don't know. And so when you think that you got it and you know and you understand and you think that you have it figured out, that's the highest point in your life that you should be questioning your belief system. And so when we're talking about deconstructing identity, we're not meaning erase your personality structure and erase, you know, your history and your heritage and your foods and your spirituality, but why not think, is this really who I am? Is this really what I believe? Or am I just going off of it because I watch a particular news station day after day after day after day? And so when I've talked to Dr. Zeidman since, he said, that's why we tell you that. That's why we ask you those questions, is because we want you to question who you think you are. And when we say to you, who do you think that you are? We really want to know, who do you think that you are? Because you're wrong most of the time.
Okay. That's good. I mean, that's deep.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And it calls you to question really everything. Our beliefs, our limiting beliefs.
I mean, and I don't want to bring in, you know, politics, but I guess I do on some level. But like RFK puts out this deal, you know, or it was publicized that there was this actor that was attacking Cheryl Hines' wife. And she's a Democrat. She's had a difficult time trying to, you know, deal with the, you know, her husband, you know, dealing with the Trump campaign, you know, and she's, her own identity is being challenged. And so you got this guy who's attacking her, mm-hmm. and calling her everything essentially under the sun. Rather than talking straight to Kennedy, he's trying to hurt Kennedy by going after the wife. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that need to be questioning themselves the most. If you're feeling so passionate about an election cycle, Americans think that this is the worst election cycle ever in the history of the world. Look at fucking Abraham Lincoln and what the fuck he went through. And he still reached out to Confederate soldiers and shook their hand and brought a coalition together. He still, look at anybody of any history that was even of any value. Malcolm X went to Mecca, switched. Why? Because he questioned his identity. He questioned what he was being taught and propagated. He became a wholer person because he could say, maybe what the Democrats are saying are fucked. Maybe what the Republicans are saying are fucked. You just question it. So he didn't follow the identity of Islam or Black Islam. He brought unto himself his identity. He brought his own personal value. And so when you take cultural risks, like the other part of the statement, he went to Mecca. He could have stayed here. He could have went right on with the same old shit. You know, and all of these leaders that we've adored over time, you can witness where they went into, I mean, after MLK died, RFK went into a Black community, which was a risk. And that was one of the only Black communities that didn't riot after King was killed. Mm-hmm. Because he took a risk.
So, in essence, I guess what we're talking about, a great example of Malcolm X, part of that, what we're endeavoring to do is to help our audience get to a point to where they can start understanding, right?
Yeah.
The need to, we're gonna help open up those pathways, hopefully, that we can start deconstructing certain stigmas that they have when it comes to religion, race, etc. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
As an African-American, there's no guarantee that if I walk into a particular Walgreens that they're going to have Afro-Sheen.
Sure.
Why? Because maybe the research for that particular location says, based on the population, we're not gonna sell as much. So what do? We go to another part of town where we know we can get that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point. But that's not racist. That's
right.
White privilege. It's white privilege. If we're gonna define white privilege, that would be what it is. We have the benefit of the majority, and it's not racist in its intent. It is racist in that it creates under-resourcedness for the people that are disproportionate to them.
So, busy business savvy, just we don't have these individuals coming into our establishment.
Right.
So why are we carrying this product? It's just a loss, you know, business-wise. So that person goes across town where I know they're going to have the product that I'm looking for.
And again, in my opinion, I don't feel that I hear your point. You know, so if you know that a certain population drinks a lot of a particular soft drink, and you put it in that poor section of town, that's where that store is going to order more of those,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to that population not being there, and it's no one's fault. It's not the company's fault.
Right.
They're just not going to carry it because there are
costs
involved. I don't think that could be considered, you know, racist or.
But it is it is an inherent privilege because I can go across the street to CVS to get whatever I want. You have to go across town. And if we're talking about intersectionality and poverty, I may not have the gas money to get over there. So it disproportionately affects me, which is privilege. So when we're talking about, like, in general, like, and I think that we're in an age where we want to create problems where there are none, and we say that those types of things are racist, or that cultural appropriation is racist, it has to do with intent. if my intent is to go out there and put a black face on or a wig on and make fun of a particular culture, or am I celebrating the culture? Because if you go to Mexico and you put any particular clothing on, or you go to Catholic religion or wherever you're at and you put their clothing on and you're participating in your dance. I mean, imagine a white person going to an Arab household and denying their coffee because they don't want to use it because it's cultural appropriation. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, that's one of the gravest insults. Right. It's like, you don't like my coffee? You know, like, mm-hmm. So we have to be careful about when we're talking about what white people are doing right or wrong. It's like, let's look at some, and intentions really avail us nothing. I mean, I do believe that. But when it comes down to the taking the cultural risk, is asking, why are you wearing that? You know, a Halloween all of a sudden got attacked.
That brings me to a memory here. There was a case on the internet of a school teacher, and she was teaching about Native American Day mm-hmm. and their history, and she was Caucasian, but she dressed up as a Native American.
Yeah.
And she started doing the song and dance. She went on and on and on, mm-hmm. I mean, as a teacher. And it's like, what is educational really about this? It's almost mm-hmm. like it was a mockery.
Yeah.
And so she was she was put on leave after that. Yeah, because she had a Native American student who felt offended by her act.
And I do think that when people feel offended, they feel justified by the consequences that they're able to establish. So if I can cancel somebody or I can get them fired, I'm like, that gives me a sense of power. I feel like the powerlessness that I have as a group of people that aren't the majority, whatever it might be, wealth or whatever it is, whatever the dominant culture is, that when I can get somebody fired, I feel like I finally have some power. And I don't want to really get into philosophy, but power is being able to create change in that person. And the person that you cancel isn't going to change.
Exactly.
That's not what causes change. It causes obedience.
Right.
So going back to cultural risk, that's what we were, right? And I know you mentioned the business and having... And I know it's real popular. It's a popular term today. It's called diversity and inclusion.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies are bringing in this program so they can actually have their employees to understand their culture, for other employees to understand the culture, and to help them to feel inclusive. Mm-hmm. So there are different programs that are being created within organizations today,
yeah,
which is a good thing.
Yeah, well, so it depends on the context. Because, so like, I would say that if I were an African American person and I was able to get into a particular job or college or wherever based on lower standards, I would be insulted as hell.
When you say lower standards,
I mean, you know, I don't know enough about the topic to really speak from an authoritative perspective. But, you know, I've heard things like certain colleges say, well, if, you know, we're going to prioritize your identity over your scores.
So you're saying, okay, so because this is a whole nother...
We're going into something else.
Well, no, it's okay, because this is all part of the deconstructing part when we're talking about culture. And so, because there's different layers in my mind when it comes to... lowering standards.
Let me finish my sentence real quick.
Okay.
But I do believe in a good ass sandwich. and so, like, if you have white people who are I'm just figuratively the meat.
Right.
And all I get is the meat. I know full well that if I have lettuce, onions, tomato, mayo, mustard, onions, and I have me a big ass some sandwich, then I know that shit's gonna taste better. And so if I'm inclusive and I make sure that I don't exclude, that I'm actively working toward finding accomplished people who meet the criteria, who, you know, because I think that that's part of the problem as well, is that and again, I said, I don't know enough about it, but let's say that you have a person of a different color than white and they have just a high school diploma, but you have another person who has a bachelor's degree. I think that you don't hire the person based on those educational standards. I don't think that it's fair to equate a bachelor's degree versus a high school diploma.
Mandates
of the industry. So if you work in a medical, you know, you need a doctor with a doctor's degree, you know, to be a doctor. You can't hire somebody outside of that. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, you want perspective. You want different identities. You want diversity in your workplace.
Absolutely.
And you should be actively working to diversify and include people other than what your singular thinking is, that goes back to deconstructing identity and taking cultural risks, because you're bringing in other perspectives that are going to challenge how you behave, how you communicate, and all those things. So if you're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion based on bringing diverse ideas in and creating a big-ass sub-sandwich of people, then absolutely.
Yes.
We will continue with more provocative conversation right after an important advertisement.
Mental illness doesn't only affect the person diagnosed by it, affects everyone. If you have a loved one that has been diagnosed with a mental illness and are facing challenges, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, provides monthly confidential family support groups. You can gain support from peers who understand your experience, as well as insight into challenges and successes of others, because it can be overwhelming. For more information, go to www.hiddenbattlesdmi.com or call 402-200-0656. You don't have to do it alone.
The group talk about cultural perceptions, stigmas, and stereotypes.
Okay, so welcome back. You know, we talked about, you know, in the first episode we talked about intersectionality. We really tried to find what Hidden Battle was, and then like how that really relates to mental illness and stigma and substance use and physical problems. During this episode, we talked about, you know, how do you create a mission, vision, and value and values with your family? And we talked about how you can do this in pretty much any area of your life. And we're talking about converging values. And so I think, you know, Lorraine and Terrell wanted to challenge me on a comment that I made during this episode. What do you got?
Well, yeah, and just to go back into what you're saying, to articulate what we hope will be a mission that people can relate to, and that was, we came up with deconstructing identity and taking cultural risk. And so earlier you talked about leopards on couches and lampshades and whatever in some of your friends' houses and the black houses you were in, and that's good.
Yeah.
One, we never had plastic on our couches. And I just have never heard of black folks having leopards on their lampshades and on their couches and leopard patterns. I mean, you know, I mean, I just kind of had to clean that up for.
Right, but I want to say that we did have plastic on our couches. Okay, well. We didn't have leopard couches, you know, lions on their couch, but yeah, we had plastic.
So let me ask you a question. Can I ask, like, did it feel as though I was being racist or discriminatory by saying that?
No, absolutely not.
What you did, you described your perception at that time.
Right.
And so I remember when we invited you over for dinner, you came in, your first thing you looked at was the couch.
Right. And looking for lampshades, which we didn't have lampshades. Yeah, you probably go, where are the lampshades? There's so many leopards around.
It was a perception.
You know, and so that you got me dying. So when I was a little, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood where it wasn't a thing. I didn't know the concept of culture.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, so like, you know, there was this kid that would always call me white boy. He was a native kid, and I always called him Charlie Brown. Charlie. Mm-hmm. And so my teacher, you know, gave me a consequence of having to apologize for him, because I felt like I was mad because he called me white boy. And then I said, okay, whatever, sorry, Charlie. So he had to write 100 apologies, and I had to write 100 apologies. And I said, and I was being passive aggressive, like, I'm sorry, Charlie, because his name was Charlie, but I was trying to say Charlie Brown, like, sorry,
right.
Charlie,
right?
You know, trying to, you know, right. And so, and then so like, you know, around all these kids, and I'm going to their houses and stuff like that. And this is in the 80s and 90s. And in Nebraska, I don't care what you say. They had some leopard print. They had some mirrors. Okay. And it was like, okay. it was what it was. Now, dude, why am I, obviously black people are not monolithic in style or any other area. But for my personal linear experience, I wasn't like it was bad. I thought it was fancy. I'm like, we had like flowers that grew in 1800s print on our couch. It was like flowery, there was a hide-a-bed in there. It weighed 38,000 pounds. So to me, and we had green carpet and a green chair and like weird prints on the wall of trees. And so this is what I grew up with. And I see all this flashy shit. And I'm like, they're rich. That was going through my mind.
Exactly.
And so when I saw the stuff, it was exotic. Like, I wouldn't have quantified. Yeah, I wouldn't have said, like, this is a... Like, when I'm 7 years old, I would have said, this is exotic. But, like, thinking back, what was I thinking? Like, this is exotic.
Right.
And so, to me, back then when I was growing up in the neighborhood, it was what it was. We all grew up with the Salvation Army. We played basketball. We played sports. And so when you're that young...
Right.
All of this language that the lexicon of racism and prejudice and cultural diversity and cultural appropriation, all those things don't exist. They just don't exist.
Right.
You're just trying to be who you are.
And you were mentioning something about the evolution of your life in terms of going from that to being in from that setting as a young man to growing up and being in a totally white environment. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, for me, like, there's a culture shock because one of the people that was dominant in my life was a black man, and he was somebody that sexually, physically, and emotionally abused me, but I knew his grandfather, and he would always say, "You want some money?" And he would say, "You want some money?" But it was just, well, I don't know if it was slang, I don't know what it was, but that was like, I always thought, like, yeah, give me some damn money. And he would give me a quarter or a nickel or whatever. And so, like, his mom would eat starch and eat, like, starch. And to me, that wasn't a cultural. I don't, still to this day, I can't quantify or tell you what that was. But she would take starch and just eat starch. And then one of the places I learned to make hot wings was from his mom. And I knew his sister, and I knew his daughter. I was there when she was, I knew he was there during the time that they were married, and so I was just around. And then going on basketball trips and softball trips and all those kinds of things. And so for me, I was a person, I didn't feel like I was excluded. I felt like I was just part of the group. I just did. I didn't feel like you're a honky motherfucking cultural appropriator who's trying to be racist and you're dominating and killing me.
Right.
I was just a little kid.
Right.
Actually, there was a friend of Joe's who Joe taught me, that was a racist black guy who always called me cave boy.
Mm-hmm.
He did. He called me, what are you doing hanging with that cave boy? At the time, I didn't know that was a racist thing towards white people.
Yeah.
But that's what he called me, his cave boy.
Okay.
So to me, when I'm growing up and we'll get into some shit. With my history with my friends and the family, but my first girlfriend was a black girl, and my best friend was a black dude, and so I knew their brother and their sister, and I knew all these people, and it was never a race issue. We went fishing. We got stuck in the mud together, and a white farmer came and made us escape. Or helped us escape from this mud pit, towed us out with his tractor. And so, like, I just have all these experiences.
I heard that.
And so I've had all these experiences that now that I'm an adult white guy, and it's like I missed that part of who I feel like that was a part of my identity.
Yeah.
And so when we have our get-togethers out here,
just so the audience knows, that's our what generation is he?
Gen X.
And what are you?
Z.
Gen Z. Gen Z.
So yeah. We're new, and the Velcro obviously wouldn't work. So Yeah, now you have something to laugh about. Technical difficulties. At some point, we're going to bring our Gen Zer in, who we're having a conversation off camera about, not to cut you off, because he walked in the shot. Yeah, so people are like, what the hell just happened? So it's like, Lloyd. Our Gen Zer was having a conversation about some of the topic we're talking about, destigmatizing. So, you know, destigmatizing as in changing, and then their generation has less hang-ups. So at some point, you know, we're going to get our Gen Zer on board with us to talk about some of that. So not to cut you off.
No,
Jeremy.
We're good,
And I just want to say your experience, Jeremy, is, you know, just amazing. So some people will look at it as though you're been initiated into the black club, you know what I mean?
Sure,
You know what I mean? Just well, by those experiences.
There's flavor profiles that I miss. We'll get into it, but like there, I spent a lot of time, like the majority of my time, like this guy gave me rights to school, like so food.
Sure,
You know, and then I look at what I'm trying to create in my own home, it's based off of the black culture. Mm-hmm. How many times a week do you think I cook some wings? Call me a culture appropriate racist and stereotypical.
Yeah, you do
but,
eat more.
But
you
people love some fucking wings.
I do eat more chicken than we do. Every time we have and we were wondering about, is it
a black thing?
It's a cultural thing.
It is.
It's your culture.
What do you guys want?
Your
chicken? You're going to order chicken. Whoa, wait a minute.
It's part of his culture.
It's part of his culture. Exactly. We love chicken.
Yeah. And when I'm thinking about chicken, I'm thinking, they're black. They must like chicken. I want y'all to taste what I tasted.
She's a sushi queen, so she loves sushi.
Yeah, I love my chicken.
So, and I think that, like, so for the cultural, when we're getting back to the mission and statement, it's like, there's so much to really dig in, especially for per individual.
Right.
Because you have varying degrees, and to say that even white people are monolithic and that we're all racist inherently because we have privilege, those are two different topics. Being racist and white privilege are two different topics. And yes, you do have privilege because you're the dominant part of culture. You're the dominant gender, you're the dominant sexual orientation, you're the dominant religion, you're the dominant ability. And so all of these people, when we're talking about intersectionality, and when it comes down to it, is that everybody wants to do the news, you know, the CNN or C-SPAN or the ABC LMNOP, and really cut people down and create this black or white answer. In reality, when it comes down to individuality, which is, I think, hopefully what we're going to do with Hidden Battles, is teach you to individualize who you are, identify who you are, deconstruct propaganda, deconstruct religion, deconstruct whatever, so that it brings you back to your roots. I'm not telling you that if you're an African-American person who believes strongly in Jesus and you're part of the Democratic that you should abandon that, but you should temporarily take refuge individually, meditate, think about it. Who are you? What do you really believe in? Write a list down of who you are as a person, and then see if then your religion matches, if then your political affiliation matches, or your job, or your wife, or whatever, and allow yourself to become the leader within your own life rather than being the follower of the masses. I mean, give me a fucking break. You listen to whatever news station they're telling you how to believe based off of sound bites. That's the weakest position any human can take.
So we're basically talking about deconstructing the culture of how we intake media and information, which the beautiful thing about today is that there's a variety. You no longer have the three networks where everything was funneled to individuals from three networks. Then you had cable. Now you have social media. So people are getting their information from varying sources as opposed to having to...
Based on the generation. Because
you
have the baby boomer generation who's still really hyper-focused on the TV.
Right.
But then you have the Gen Xers on down who are listening to the news...
Well, plus, they get their news from TikTok.
Plus podcasts.
They get
plus
YouTube.
So you have this new blend, and then you have, as your generations go down, Aaron's not cutting on no CNN.
No. And that's part of what we're talking about.
Are you? Do you watch CNN?
No.
You
no.
see what I'm saying? No, so, like, no. he's
getting... Only when it's on.
Yeah.
And who's putting it on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just saying.
Exactly.
So if you're watching CNN, throw on some Fox.
The group gets back to cultural risks and values.
Those are conversations that happen over time, and they can change over time. And, you know, during, prior to the show, we were talking about, you know, making sure that our, I guess, your values, you have to be able to accept who you are. And you write your values down as a family, not your aspirations, not what you think that you are. You have to be able to have an ominous conversation and say, we spend $1,000 a year on Christmas, $500 on each child's birthday. You are materialistic. And you need to write that word down and say, my family value right now is materialistic. It may not be socially acceptable. It may be a bad word to you. But you have to be able to say who you are as you sit and you stand. Individual, family, whatever that is. Then, and we're going to get into goals and objectives and how you kind of deconstruct and destigmatize mental illness, but you have to know who you are first. And so don't sit here and say that you value fiscal responsibility, but you're spending thousands of dollars a year on Christmas presents and all these objects, and then say, on the other hand, that you value savings when you ain't got a savings account. You would put that as a goal later. And so then you can start to change, as we're talking about right now. We have some, what we think our goals and objectives, or what we think our values are right now, we need to be able to have conversation about, is what we're doing and saying in this podcast and with this business actually matching our behaviors, actually matching? And that's why you have three behaviors that you say under each value.
So, you know, you sound like the Grinch who stole Christmas, right?
Well, you know, I mean, we were talking about...
I mean, you're telling people, how do you, like... I mean, we're parents. I mean, Christmas is that one time of the year where you, like, lose your freaking mind financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like... Yeah. I mean, it's like... Yeah. And then you're sitting back going, what the heck did I just do?
Yeah.
You know, I spent all this money...
Yeah.
And it's a perpetual cycle that something hits that brain in the month of December, and you got this mad rush to spend all the money you can spend.
Yeah. You shop all year for Christmas. Right, you know?
Yeah.
You're finding deals.
But here's the thing. If you're doing that at Christmas time, you're doing that somewhere throughout the year also.
Sure. Right. So. You know, when you talked about that, the first thing that came to mind to me was experience. What experiences, because if you look it up, any research that says anything that you purchase is less memorable than any experience.
Yeah, but check it out. We talked about values, and we talked about these values being passed on from one generation to the next. So, as children, or as a child, now that I'm an adult, when I was a child, I can vividly remember getting that shiny bike.
Mm-hmm.
So, what did I do when our kids were 10, 8, 12? I lost my mind trying to find these electric bikes.
I'm going to get you.
Okay, go.
What were you trying to recreate?
But I just told you.
No.
I was subconsciously recalling what I experienced.
Ah, boom. Experience.
Exactly. Boom. And it was a joyful experience.
Yes.
I felt good. And so we wanted our kids to feel good.
And so you valued the experience of getting that bike.
Right.
Because that was the product that was presented to you. But I can tell you that we were poor as hell, and we had the church bring us a little broke-ass transformer, and I loved it to death. I loved it. It was my favorite toy. When I had to go to the hospital, I wanted to take my damn transformer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the experience that you create. So just what if you decided that you weren't going to buy anything for your children for Christmas, but you bought a tent and you put it up in the house and you put a movie on and you made some hot cocoa and you had your Christmas Eve thing going on. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning you woke up and then you shared stories with each other, mm-hmm. or you gave gifts to each other, or you mm-hmm. did something like that. And then later on you had your meal and everybody was cooking with you and you had this experience. It's not the product that is there that creates experience. Right. It's the family. I woke up, I was excited. I had a damn orange and an apple in my stocking and I loved it. Mm-hmm. I had a toothbrush, mm-hmm. toothpaste, and then it turned into deodorant. You know, like my stocking was not full to the brim with candy. Right. It was stuff that I needed.
Right.
Yeah.
And I liked that. Right. I still, to this day, I recreated that experience for my kid.
Right.
And so, if you're doing that, you're using consumerism and materialism to recreate an experience that you had.
And that sucks.
It's not necessary for your children's happiness.
Exactly.
It's not having a great, turning on the old 20s and 30s and 40s singers of the Christmas music and mm-hmm. playing that on a vinyl mm-hmm. and creating some nostalgia, creating old recipes, mm-hmm. getting your children involved in baking and building gingerbread houses, and you're celebrating. But the foundation of the conversation, in my opinion, mm-hmm. that you should be having is your mission, vision, and values. You're having a yearly recap of celebration of look what we did as a family this year. It's a renewal. Winter is you're shedding the old, right. and then spring is bringing in the new. Right. So you're talking about what you've shed as a family. You know what? We're no longer materialistic. We're now this. Look at what we did. So it's a celebration after celebration after celebration, rather than it being family members mad because they fucked the macaroni up, you know, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, or somebody's recipe fell off because they've got dementia, or you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, so it's that experience. And so that was where I saw that I was going to get you. It wasn't the bike that actually got right. you. It was that you felt connection and love and you felt recognized.
Right.
And so giving that to your children and recognizing their accomplishments, recognizing their sacrifices.
Right.
What that really does is when you give those gifts, and gifts are nice. I mean, you can show
give gifts. I'm not saying don't.
Right.
Got your point. Yeah.
But then they're a temporary lift also. It's temporary. It's a temporary joy and satisfaction.
Ask your kid on Christmas morning, what did they get for last Christmas, and see what they say. I don't know. I don't
exactly.
remember.
Right. No,
but they remember the fun, the family. They remember the games. They remember the game night. They remember the tent. They remember the cocoa. They remember the movies. They remember the experience.
Right. And also it instills a habit.
Yeah.
An expectation. Mm-hmm. Well, I got this Christmas, so next Christmas I want that. Now I want the best Jordans. I want this and that. And mm-hmm. you become materialistic.
Extremely. And I like something you said earlier, Jeremy, about you value what your behavior says.
Right.
You value what your behavior. Can you just really break that down?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the values, you're doing about five values, and that doesn't mean you don't have other values, but when we're building the system in which your family's operating from, you have five core values. You don't need 30, you need five. And then under each of those values, you have three behaviors. So like, for instance, we have STFU. What does that mean to us? Mm-hmm. Well, what it means to us is allow your family and yourself to have some privacy. Don't put those pictures up. You don't need to brag. We don't care what you ate
on social media.
Who cares what you ate the last 30 meals? You know, or who cares that you got your new car? All people are doing on social media is they're like code checking. They're like saying, well, this is what I got. And then everybody looks at it and they're like, wow, their life's perfect. No, it ain't.
Right.
Because their life was perfect, they wouldn't need to brag about what they got. And then so also with STFU is that listen to the other side. Listen to the people that you agree with and listen to the people that you don't agree with. And we all know social media algorithms mm-hmm. are designed to give you more of what you like.
Right.
And those are all based on advertisements. And so you say to yourself, why is TikTok free? Why is Facebook free? Well, we know based on a documentary recently, because you're the product.
Exactly.
You're the one that's being sold. Exactly. You're the one that you're not... You're given everything that you like and own and love because advertisers can calculate whether or not you're going to purchase something or not.
Exactly.
And they just target their advertisements to more of what you like. They're categorizing you. They're compartmentalizing the human being. And the behaviors are things that you can actually observe. They're not things like, oh, we want to maintain this meeting. No. It's things that you can accomplish that are measurable, that you can see and hear, whether it's our podcast or your family or your church or whatever you're looking for. Mm-hmm. You're not just falling into the category of the algorithm that's been designed for you, but you're literally listening and saying, okay, well, I voted for Kamala Harris. I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris. But again, I agree with this Kennedy policy, or I agree with this Trump policy. I'm going to lobby my senator and say, I support those other policies because they're good. You need to adopt those as your policy. Otherwise, I'm not voting for you because, you know, right now food is a big thing for Kennedy. Well, who isn't it a good thing, you know?
Right.
And so, like, why couldn't you say to your Republican or Democrat senator, whoever's the president, whoever, I need you to support this particular issue. Even though I disagree with the candidate, I do agree with the policy. That's a behavior that you're displaying, saying, I value nutrition and health for my family. And even though this person that I have a disagreement with, that I hate, has a good idea, I need you now, the person that I support, to adopt that policy. That is a behavior that I'm talking about.
So, so what do you call a behavior of an individual who says, I'm not voting because they're all full of shit. They all lie. And so you have a lot of people who just don't believe politicians, and thus they don't go to the polls. They're not even independents.
You know, I'm hoping that we can get into this a lot deeper a little later, but really what it comes down to is, I'm just talking about my belief system. I don't believe that the candidates who are the president of the United States are selected in a way that people truly have a choice. They're just people that the corporations are willing to put up with, regardless of which party.
So you, your conversation, you value what? How do you?
Do you want to know what Jerome values? Make sure to tune in next week. Mental Illness Podcast, join in every week. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. Join in next week when the advocates talk about intersectionality and what every family needs, their own family mission, vision, and values.